Welcome to Signs of the Southland for Sunday, February 18th, 2024. Gentlemen, let's start with the latest batch of QS World University rankings. Georgia Tech fourth in the ACC in these rankings. They are university rankings across the world, obviously, like it says on the tin, based on like a number of arbitrary factors, including, let's see here, academic reputation, employer reputation, faculty slash student, citations per faculty, international students, international research network, employment outcomes, and sustainability. Would
Well, my thing there is like there's a lot of really smart kids in the US that go to US schools. Like, I feel like that dings a domestic student. Like, I don't know. And a lot of smart French kids go to the Sorbonne and whatnot. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. It seems a little odd to me there, but you know, no, they didn't call us up when they decided on these categories, at least.
They certainly did not. Your ACC rankings, out of these rankings, Stanford University at number five in the world, the University of California at Berkeley, number 10, conveniently acronymed as UCB instead of literally any other abbreviation that it uses. Duke at third in the conference of 57, Georgia Tech at fourth, 97th in the world. UNC rounds out the top five of the ACC at 132. Any other notables from you on this list, Jake, because you put this together for us?
Yeah, I did want to note just how far above Texas was from the rest of the conference in terms of the one it's joining. Texas and Texas A&M are significantly higher there. Again, there's probably some weird distribution, satellite campuses, things like that, med schools, things like that. It's like University of Illinois at Chicago, super high on the list, highest Missouri Valley school by far, as a dental medical school type situation. I'm sure that that plays into it. Also worth noting, UCLA and Washington both in the top four for the Big Ten post shakeup. So that's probably worth noting as well. And then also just for our local context, Georgia Tech, if you just limit it to U.S. schools, figures to be 26th on this list. Duke inside the top 20. Most of the ACC figures pretty well. Then it kind of branches out past about the 11th or 12th school, but yeah, now that there's 18, I guess that's just barely more than half. There, I guess 13 in the top 100 is certainly more than half, but still interesting. But yeah, local notables: Emory, 166 overall, fifth in the UAA, which is the second overall conference behind the Ivy League. So good job, UAA, D3, represent, I suppose. Emory 38th in the nation. The University in Athens, 85th, sixth overall in the SEC, 514 in the world. And Georgia State, number one in the Sun Belt, approximately 126, give or take, and 851 overall in the world. The only other Sun Belt school that made this ranking was the University of South Alabama. So whatever State's doing, they're certainly above their peers in that regard. So I thought that was kind of neat.
Good stuff. Let's first talk about two teams that have nothing to do with national and international rankings: women's basketball and men's basketball. Let's start with the women, whose game versus NC State just ended. We'll get to that in a minute. Their first game this past week was a 64-63 win at Clemson. Jack, what do you have for us on this one?
For one, road game, we're finishing the traditional home and home against the Tigers, as we do in basically everything. It started out well. We beat Clemson earlier this year. Should have won by a lot in this game. Honestly, we're better than them. They've only got one player that really can do damage against us, and she did in the third quarter. I think we got outscored by 17 in the third quarter after we were up like nine or something like that. Like, it was just the third quarter, like the worst of the third quarter of the worst third quarter naps we've done all year. But Kara Dunn absolutely came through clutch in the fourth quarter. She had 22 second half points and 15 of those in the fourth quarter. So finding ways to get out of it. It was only a 1 point game, but that game was effectively over at 64-60. Clemson had a possession they needed two possessions to win. They only had time for one by the time we were up four. So a 1 point game that played like a little bit larger than a 1 point game. But nonetheless, I mean, a win's good because we were definitely sliding here for a few games, and so that was nice to see. And it did well because we nearly had North Carolina State today, who was number six in the nation. So
Yeah,
we'll take
let's get
that.
into that one while we're on the subject. That's an 86-85 loss in overtime. I think right before we hit record, Tony Morgan missed the game-winning shot to beat North Carolina State. And that's a really good North Carolina State team, right? We talk about that team being near the top of the conference most years. I think they were as high as number eight this year. I don't have their
They're
current
number six
ranking.
right now. They're number six right now and third in the ACC. Yeah.
Yeah,
They've come
so
along a little bit too. If I recall, they started a little bit slower, so they've been playing, I guess, better basketball of late. Is that a fair assessment, gents? they're 22-3.
So
Yeah.
starting
So
slow for them is probably only going like 3-1 in a week. Oh no.
yeah. So I'm like, yeah, they have the fewest
But
losses in the conference.
this one was dominated by Tech early, right? You said I remember when we were talking about this in our Rhino
Yeah.
Writers Room earlier, Tech was shooting like 80% or something in that first quarter.
Yeah, we finished at 77. We shot 77% in the first quarter and we're leading by two. That's how freaking good North Carolina State is. Like they shot 56%, which is that's good too. We shot the lights out, couldn't do anything. Second quarter, we finally kind of stopped them a little bit. But we were I think were we down one at half? I'm forgetting. But I mean, like we score, we had a consistent scoring the entire game, which is not a thing we've really done. And we managed to reverse the third quarter nap. We outscored them in the third quarter. We have been outscored by like 200 points in the third quarter as a whole this year. Not 200, sorry, that's wrong. By a lot, just by a lot of points. We actually beat them in the third, and that set us up well in the fourth, where we had our worst shooting quarter at 42%, which usually is a good quarter for us. So that was extremely good to see. But they who was their girl that was absolutely just destroying us? Oh, sorry, I'm gonna screw up the name. Azia James, I think is how you say it, but she had 30 and had like 20 something by half. She had 22 by halftime, which is why NC State was holding into it. Also North Carolina State doesn't foul, which is a big thing here. They had 21 free throw attempts. We had 11 total. And so their 17 made free throws absolutely were the difference here. We shot the three really well at 48% and we had, I think, 8 of 11 at one point in the first half. Yeah. So it's in terms of well-rounded game, this was as well-rounded as we've ever played. Kara Dunn scored 31, made seven threes, her career high. Tony scored 23. Kayla scored 16. Career high minutes for a few players here because they hadn't done deep overtime like this before. So, I mean, even though it's a loss, this is the most well-rounded we played all year. I think tied for the most points we put up all year, which was also a loss to Florida State on the road. So, ho hopefully this turns into something good because we got Louisville next, and they are also good. So it'd be nice to not maybe this team goes up and down. They're young, they're going to do that, but it would be nice to not have the down come quite yet. Especially as I mean, we can still play for some. Not play in the first round of the ACC tournament. Like, we're still playing for that. So, any win here can go a long way.
I'm just over moral victories. Losing by one on the road to an awesome team is certainly about as close as it gets. So I'm going to tentatively allow it. It's just one of those things where it's like, man, they finally had a game where they put it all together and they still came up a little bit short. And that's very emblematic, I think, of this year in that they've generally handled teams that they're better than. Yeah, sometimes it's a little bit close, but it just extremely emblematic of the year.
That game versus Louisville is also Aaliyah Love's return to Georgia Tech. That's a Thursday, the 22nd of February. That's a 7 p.m. first tip at McCamish Pavilion. Let's flip over to the men, who at last check are second to last in the ACC and will probably be playing on that first day in the ACC tournament this year. They started their week off with a loss to Notre Dame at Purcell Pavilion. That put them dead last in the ACC. They have played, it was a 3-point loss, excuse me. That's a 58-55. They love playing very tight games versus Notre Dame. And I think for the entirety of my time watching them, They have only played these incredibly stupid, very close games versus Notre Dame. I don't know. I don't know what to make about it, honestly. Jake, do you have anything here?
I don't know what the schedule makers in 2014, 2015 were thinking. And they're like, oh, Georgia Tech, Notre Dame, we need to reset these protected rivals. Let's put these guys together. And yeah, historical football gridiron rivalry makes sense. There's some gold there, I guess. Whatever. We'll figure it out.
Yes, both of these teams do share gold as a primary color. That is true.
And they nailed it. Like these two teams, yeah, like even in years where Notre Dame's a tournament team and Georgia Tech hasn't been, they've all been close. Slightly tech way, slightly not tech way, whatever. But whoever decided that was going to be like the permanent pairing, kudos to them because like multiple coaches, I guess this is three coaches for Tech, two for Notre Dame now, where it's just been neck and neck the entire way. And yeah, it stinks to lose to both these teams. Georgia Tech is all four of their conference wins have come against teams that were better than 500 in conference. We've been over the Clemson, Duke, UNC, but Syracuse is a pretty solid team. I mean, they just knocked off North Carolina. Maybe we broke North Carolina. I don't know. But like they just knocked off a good North Carolina team like 4 days ago. And Georgia Tech and I was listening to the presser after the men's game last night. That there were finally things that kind of came up their way down the stretch. Because yeah, there's been a couple blowouts for Tech this year. I'm not going to sugarcoat that, but a lot of those losses have been, two, three possession games, sometimes one possession games, like we saw against Notre Dame, overtime loss to them earlier this year. So it's tough. It's weird. It's tough. It's kind of inexplicable, but yeah, kudos to pairing Georgia Tech and Notre Dame together because it's always entertaining. And kudos to Tech for getting a fourth notch in the win column because I don't know. I think I'm not going to guarantee anything, not even a win at ACC's. But if they play the right way the right day, they could beat anyone in the conference. And if they don't, then they could certainly lose to any team in the
Oh
conference
yeah,
too, I think is where I'm at there.
we saw that last year. They got hot for just a couple games there, and it just overlapped with the tournament. And we beat Pitt. We're just like, hold on a second here. Should we be hopeful? And obviously, we shouldn't have been at that point. But it was it stuff like that happens. You just because these games happen back to back to back. If it's your right, so how the playoffs work. It's got to get hot in October if you want to win if you want to win a World Series. So.
Well, and I do want to note, I was listening to the pregame show before I got home yesterday because love that radio content and I appreciate that it starts before tip. But I did catch Andy Demetra called it. He said if they can hold Syracuse under their usual 3-point percentage, which typically they're about 35%, Georgia Tech, has good stands good chance of winning, et cetera, all the usual broadcaster sportsy terms. Syracuse shot 16% yesterday, 4 for 25. They never clicked out there. And what do you know? Georgia Tech notches a win, forces them to go inside. And yeah, they were effective from field goals writ large, 36, 37% for the game. But hey, that's a difference maker right there, is it not?
Yeah, for sure. I'm looking at the standings right now. Of the 15 teams in the conference, only seven of them have winning records. And everyone from Syracuse down has only at most two road wins. Syracuse only has one. So there is a very clear divide of who is probably going to win a game or who's not going to win a game in these last couple weeks here of home and road and stuff like that. So Louisville is wait, what's our next game? Sorry, I was thinking of the women for a second.
We
Clemson's
get
at
next game is
Clemson.
Clemson.
Clemson. Okay, so looking at Clemson, they are 4-3. They're one of the last winning teams on the road at 4-3, and they're also 3-4 at home because of us. So.
Brad Burnell is, remains one of the most confusing enigmas in college basketball. That's really all I got. But we do, if Tech gets another chance to face off against him and his Tigers on a Wednesday. That is the 21st of February at 7 p.m. Any final notes on basketball before we move on to the various stickball diamonds?
I might be wrong, but is that our final home game this year?
I think we've got one or two more.
Wait, one more. Wait,
I know it's not our last one, but
you're
I
right.
know
Yeah,
we
we get.
have at least two.
Yeah, three games to go. Wednesday against Clemson, and then this coming Saturday in Coral Gables against Miami, and then a week. We get a whole week off, and then we host Florida State for the finale.
No, we got Wake Forest and
Oh, wait,
Virginia in
sorry. I didn't
March
scroll
too.
down.
Those
Oh,
are
shoot.
both on the road, though.
I'm
Those are
using a different
both on the
monitor.
road.
I'm using a different monitor. It's throwing me off. We have five games left. My Lord. Okay, never mind. I should have known. It's only February 18th. Stuff not mid-March yet.
Oh,
Yeah.
it'll be mid-March soon enough. Don't you worry.
Tomorrow, probably, yeah.
More or less. More or less. Let's kick it over to Clearwater, Florida for softball's latest escapades. They did better than I think what we prognosticated at the Clearwater Invitational. Instead of going winless with only 8 runs scored, they went winless, but with far more than 8 runs scored. Actually, they scored more than 8 runs in, I think, almost in at least two of their games. Just to read off the results here, a loss to Stanford to start the weekend, a walk-off loss to Minnesota, which we'll touch on in a couple minutes here, a loss to Northwestern, a loss to LSU, and then they were losing to Tennessee before weather canceled the rest of their schedule for the weekend. Weird tournament, I think. Tech looked both competitive and also kind of non-competitive at times. I think a couple of things for me watching the Minnesota game almost cover to cover. I think Jaden Studebaker had a pretty good performance on the mound to start that game. Got herself out of a couple of jams, but there were some very, how do I say this? I had some serious concerns about the cleanliness of the fielding that I saw. A lot of just kind of dropped ground outs at first base, like really simple kind of plays that I would expect most. I mean, I'm saying this as someone that hasn't played, so grain of salt, of course, but like really simple plays that I think are pretty routine and that I see like most top level softball teams make. A lot of, like I said, a lot of drop ground ball outs at first base. There was a moment in that Minnesota game where the pitcher, the third baseman, or third baseman, and the catcher all collapsed on a pop fly in the or a foul pop, and all nearly crashed into each other before a catcher, Rhys Hunter, nabbed that ball. Like there are just some like fundamental things here that are not looking too great in that regard. But those there are things that can be ironed out with some reps. I think that is good to say, at least.
It is never a good sign when the score is more than zero to whatever Georgia Tech has, and the Twitter account is calling out the fact that there are 0 earned runs.
Yes. Yes.
That's my wisdom for the day.
Which is
Yeah,
odd
I
for
mean,
us. Which is odd for us because, like, our defense is like the thing for us. Like, that's been our bread and butter, at least. Like, I mean, it better than the hitting, certainly better than the pitching. Like, we had.
I would say hitting.
I'll say this much. I'll say this much. The hitting has been there, but I think
Historically,
what they had.
I should clarify. Historically, this year different, yes, but
Yeah,
the
yeah.
defense
I'll
was
say
there.
like when they've had players like Bailey Zeitler in that midfield, I say midfield, God, I'm still sticking with soccer, but like that middle infield, right? Like Bailey Zeitler, and I can't remember who the shortstop was for so long, but those kinds of players that make up that infield, they were really, really good defensively, especially on anything like not a lot of stuff left the infield unless it was really zipped out there. It's definitely taken a step back in the last 2 years. I think they've had some trouble, and maybe obviously this is a small sample size of watching one game this year, but last year and this year, I think combined, they've had some trouble dealing with some of the more simple plays, and it's hard to know where that disconnect is coming from, I think.
Well, and I kind of want to just talk through some of the just general thoughts we had before Clearwater and see how they stand based on the games we did get to play. Given that it ended in a walk-off, I feel pretty comfortable in having said that, we could probably expect Minnesota to be the game Tech's most in the mix for. That was an 11-2 final. Just for those who are listening who may not have been able to watch, that was 11 Tech runs on 12 hits with one walk there. Only struck out 5 times, pretty solid. Allowed 9 walks the other direction, though. Gents, I think my concern moving forward, and having said, yeah, Minnesota, good team, probably the winnable game. It's really going to come down to that pitching, I think, because that seems to me at least that the bats are working. But if you're putting a lot of people on base, it's just giving them so many chances to get those runs across. No?
No, I'm with you. Let me read out the list of really good things that happened, because all these are basically hitting. Emma
Yeah.
Mangini, she had that homer to tie the game against Minnesota in the top of the seventh, so we were down. We've had a lot of late game homers this year already. Ella Edgman had a home run robbery. Mallory Black went 8 for 11 throughout the four games. Like, she was untouched. She could not stop just hitting the ball solidly, and 2 walks. So she got on base 10 times. Sarah Beth Allen had her first ever triple. She is not fast at all. She just found the right part of the field, and those fields are a little bit deeper, I think, than newborn. So there's room where the ball can just start keep rolling. And she got a good triple, but she's hitting 500 so far in our 10 games, which is really good. And her OBP is 0.618. Her OPS is like approaching like 1.8 or something like that. Not 1.8. It's up there. It's up there. So hitting wise, absolutely doing this
One point
stuff.
eight would be pretty ridiculous, to be
That is
fair.
yes, yeah, that is absurd. But everyone pretty much is getting contact. Jin Soleo's already got 2 homers this year. She had 2, I think, coming into this season total, or 2 or 3 coming into the season. She's got 2 in 10 games. Tiffany Domingue hit her first homer with us. Everyone's doing well. Grayson Tucker, who's coming off the bench, has reached base 7 times in a row. So the freshmen are doing, everyone's doing something here at the plate, which I think is critical, which was definitely a thing we didn't have all the time last year. But I think we noted everyone's needs to make some marginal improvements year over year, and it's happening, which in that sense, that's good to see from the plate. But then the pitching, as you said.
So my kind of, I guess framing for where we're at so far. Georgia Tech, following the 4 games they did get to complete in Clearwater, is sitting at 3-7 overall. 5 of those losses are to ranked teams, really good teams. I think the only game that's really concerned me so far, dare I say, is the Northwestern follow-up.
Agreed.
On Saturday. That was a 19-6 run rule in 5 innings. Georgia Tech had generally held up pretty well at pretty close 12-8 loss to LSU. Both the Bama games were within a handful of runs, but a 13 run shellacking, that's certainly the one that it's kind of like the men's basketball Cincinnati game from earlier this year, where it's like, close losses can kind of deal with to an extent, but that one seemed to be the tough way to send it out too, right? Like, they didn't finish the Tennessee game. They didn't get to play Oklahoma State, but
Yeah.
I don't know.
Is this where we
That's
start
that,
talking?
yeah.
Yeah. Is this where we start talking about Blake Nelliman?
Yes, go for
So let me read her stat line from this Northwestern game. 2.2 innings pitched, 5 hits allowed, 9 runs allowed, 7 earned, 6 walks in 21
Yeah.
batters faced.
And to
Right
add to
now.
that, actually, you can take that walks bit going back to the Minnesota game too,
Yes, you
because she
can.
came
Yeah.
in to close and she gave up multiple walks and had 2 wild pitches before Minnesota put a ball through the left side of the infield to send a runner home with the bases loaded. So
Yeah. And she is not,
something
yeah.
is wrong.
And
Like,
she's not alone in
or
this. While she has the most innings pitched so far this season at 17 and 2/3, she is accountable for 17. She's accounted for 17 walks, 22 strikeouts, both team lead. The team has walked more people than they've struck out. 59 walks, 54 strikeouts. This is a problem across all of our pitchers here, between the walk to strikeout, the Only person with more strikeouts and walks is Sophia Boyles, 10 Ks, 7 walks. And she had 4 strikeouts in a row against Tennessee before they rained out that game. I'm so mad that game got rained out because she was on a roll, including, I forgot Tennessee's best hitter name, but the one who hit like 25 homers last year, she got her out on some, on a high fastball that was way out of the zone. So like she was dealing. And then Kinsey Norton has 6 and 6, but everyone else is, oh, and then Blake, but Jaden, Michaela, and Chandler all have more walks than strikeouts. I kind of want to also just lightly touch on the fact that Chandler Dennis in 5 2/3 innings, the fewest number of innings pitched, has allowed 18 earned runs, the most on the team.
It's
So,
not a great situation, and I think that
no.
this is the thing that we pointed to before this year, and also pointed to last year as the area that needs the most improvement. It is still not great, even if it's a small sample. The thing is that they've thrown so many of these pitchers out there, and they're all getting like similarly negative results, right? I think they
For
have
the most part,
moments
yeah.
with. They have streaks where they are dealing. I think Sophia Boyles had that 4-strikeout streak, but then you contrast that with her start versus Stanford, where she did not look so hot to begin the game, right?
No,
So
no.
it's like a for every yin you can find a yang for this,
Yeah.
and probably two or three yang, so to speak. So it's I don't know. It's frustrating to me, especially in that Minnesota game where I led with this saying that Jaden Studebaker in that Minnesota game had some stuff to her, right? Like she started out that game pretty well, but she did get herself into jams. She got out of two or three of them, and then started giving up hits on bases loaded situations or two runners on situations. And like we're not just talking about dribblers through the infield, right? We're talking about hard contact for some of those. So
Yeah,
I
I
don't
would
know.
really
My
be curious.
brain
It
here is like, what is the root cause? What needs to be improved? Because when it's happening to all of your pitchers, especially with pitchers that we know have priors of being solid, and
Yeah.
maybe Nelemann is now a year and a half plus removed from that solidity,
At
so
this point,
maybe,
yeah.
but like where is the root cause?
Yeah.
And I just don't know where that is.
I really wish we had an MLB Statcast for this stuff because I'd be really curious what the exit velos are across the pitchers.
I would really like to see some hard hit percent numbers
Yeah,
on
that
some of
stuff.
these
I'm
for
sure
sure.
that I think the team probably has that because I know they keep a lot of numbers but with their own assistants and stuff like that. So I'm sure they're seeing that kind of stuff. Looking at the last number I'll note is Sophia Boyles has by far the best batting average against at 239. Everyone else is at 271 or worse. The team as a whole is allowed, teams are hitting 316 against us as a whole. But then again, four of these games are against, no, six of these games are against illegitimately great teams. So they were always probably going to hit on us, but all of them hit on us, which is, I think, another big note here. But,
Yeah,
but,
that's a bit concerning, I would say.
yeah, it's again, I think it's hard to make a lot of okay, well, it's hard to make a lot of big sweeping statements just because of the level of about this tournament specifically because the level of competition was so high. But
Yeah.
to summarize, I think a lot of the outcomes that we saw during this tournament were kind of we saw the symptoms heading into it, and we've seen the symptoms before. So we'll just kind of have to like they get a couple weeks here where they face competition that is a couple a multiple strata lower than a Stanford or even a Northwestern or a Minnesota. They'll face Georgia State at midweek on the on Wednesday on the 21st, and then they have the I-75 tournament. Versus, let's see who the competition here is. UNC Greensboro, Army, Robert Morris, and Ball State at the weekend. So again, like let's see how they can reset coming off of that really tough stretch, and if they can get back up to 500 this weekend and through the midweek, and if they can use these games versus these kinds of teams in order to reset some of these fundamentals, right? And get back to basics on the mound. I think that's what we want to see from, at least that's what I want to see from this weekend and this week is especially on the fielding side, where we saw a lot of missteps in Clearwater, cleaning that up, staying clear for the entire weekend. That's what I'm looking out for.
Yeah, we've got a lot of time to get right, and a lot of games. What this is one, two, three, four, five, six, seven games this week that we have to get right. So plenty of innings to do so. Fun notes that I figured out from Jake's reworked media guide. We've never played Army or Robert Morris in football. Tech has never played Robert Morris in anything head to head. So check one off the list of teams we've now played. Theoretically, hoping. I hope that game doesn't get rained out. If that game gets
It's
rained out, it'd be
Schedule
bad.
Gami. Woo!
Yay. Schedule
Schedule Gami.
Gami. That'd be a good Twitter account. Jake, you should make that Twitter account. IMO. Georgia Tech Schedule Gami.
I would just follow at from the Rumble FTRS blog on Twitter for all your schedule
Yeah, I was
Gami
going to
needs.
say we have no need to separate out the brands. It's all about branding, centralizing. We
What, showing
got
effort and
thousands of
grit on social
followers there,
media?
you know? Yeah,
Also, if
well.
you're listening and don't follow us on Twitter, we need 30 and we're at 5,000. So here's 10 seconds. Open Twitter. If you don't have Twitter, I don't blame you. Don't download it. But, get us to 5K. That'd be cool.
You can also subscribe to our podcast. You should be doing that anyway if you haven't already. Subscribe to our podcast, leave us a review, and you can all do that during this short break.
Yeah, in the meantime, I do want to let everyone know that Section 103 shipping will resume on Friday. So go ahead and order stuff this week, but it'll come out on Friday. But in the meantime, as always, you can head over there and we'll have free shipping on those orders that ship on Friday from $70. The latest, greatest place to get Georgia Tech apparel, white, gold, and otherwise. It's soft, it's warm. All the things that you need great wear to be. Check it out. Section 103 on Twitter and section103.com.
Welcome back to Signs of the Southland for Sunday, February 18th. Let's switch over to the other type of stickball diamond sport. Let's talk about baseball and their opening weekend. Today's game is still in progress. That had its first pitch at 1 p.m., and we'll talk about that a little bit. But let's start on Friday. Let's start on opening day. A 21-8 opening day victory versus Radford that did not look like it was going to end that way after the first inning. I think it was 6-0 Radford
Yep,
after
six
the
one.
first inning.
Yeah, 6-0 after the top of the first inning. Huge Miami of
Terabuse.
Ohio
Opening weekend energy from last year, by the way. Just tremendous.
Exact same. Yeah.
Terabuse, in his first start of the year, did not have a particularly great Friday. I think he was pulled after that first inning. But the bats came alive during the rest of the game, put together 21-2 run to end the game. Seven homers for Tech in this game, two from newcomer Drew Burris, another from newcomer Peyton Green, Cam Jones, Van Lackey, Trey Younger with an inside the Parker, and then Mike Bisciotti to round out that list of seven. This was the most runs from Tech on an opening day ever. Ben King was in long relief for Terabuse for most of this game. He was doing okay. I think there were a couple of tricky situations that he had to navigate, but obviously the bats helped him out. They gave him a lot of run support. I think watching this one, my only assessment of the game was the say hello to the new guy, same as the old guy energy.
It was a lot of that. It was a lot of that. We had five guys pitching this game. King had the most innings at 2 2/3. He faced 12 batters, most of anybody. And then Tate McKee, Dawson Brown, and Caden Gaudette finished out that game. Radford had to throw 1 2 3 4 5 6 7 8 guys. So that's which as you do when you allow that many runs. So I mean, I assume this is a pay for play game where we had them come down here for this. But I mean, that's still. That still sucks, but I mean, we won though,
I
so.
mean, there's a Radford team that went 10-45 last season. I think we did note in our writers room a bunch of injuries though.
Yeah.
But they have turned over 30 guys on their roster, so have to keep that
Yeah,
kind
that
of team cohesion in mind as well.
I mean, not a it's a more extreme version of what we, I mean, of what we did in terms of just transfers and just completely reloading. Like we're, I mean, our lineup nearly top to bottom outside of Gisler is basically brand new.
Well,
So yeah.
I was going to say that's a trend that we've really seen, I think, accentuated the most in college baseball, low key, more so than softball, more so than the basketball. I mean, basketball, it's a smaller roster. So, I mean, Georgia Tech had four guys return last year over year, but it's something that just based on how the D1 baseball guys and some of the other content that, we have in our back pocket to research what's going on in the rest of the sport. I mean, it seems like every, whether it's that they've got a phenomenal ACC baseball podcast, by the way, ACC baseball, et cetera, in which they've sat down with all the coaches. And I mean, every coach that they've talked to, it's been, oh, yeah, we're bringing in all of these guys, whether it's freshmen or transfers. It's just a massive list of kids coming in, and a lot of turnover. It's something we saw from Tech, from Radford. And if I may be speaking out of turn here, but I believe the only pretty major program that isn't in this same boat, I believe, is East Carolina. But it's notable that people are calling out the cases where that's not something that's happening, a la, Clemson football not really pursuing the transfer portal too much.
Yeah, it's just the new normal. As much as I hate using that term, it is kind of the new normal for college baseball to have this much roster turnover, and even like players that are really good are leaving for opportunities in other places, right? I think we saw with Tommy White at NC State a couple of years ago, who vamoosed to LSU and was a big part of that LSU championship team, right? It's kind of the nature of the beast when you're talking about the transfer portal and NIL, and we can probably discuss that to death at some point, but it's the nature of the beast and how kind of college free agency is working here. So just to get back on track, we'll talk about the schedule. Saturday's game was Victory versus Radford. I think it was a 7-5, 7-3. I don't have the score in front of me, which is bad form.
7-3, you're right. Yep.
7-3. I had it the second try. Aiden Finnatary pitched 6 innings, 8 Ks, a career high on 85 pitches. So really, really good work for him. And he was able to get a lot of bullpen arms rest too, so they didn't have to come out for a second consecutive day. Matthew Ellis had a really solid day at the plate, 3 for 5, 2 doubles, and an RBI as well. Very, very windy day yesterday. Windy and cold, like really
Yes.
cold.
And the
So,
wind was straight out of the north, straight out of the north. So anything to left field was particularly impacted.
Cam Jones got a good amount of run yesterday on the mound as well. So, good for him. So far in today's contest, I think that's still in the middle innings there. Down 3-0, Tech was early in this game before a Peyton Green grand slam. They were up 4-0. It's now, or 4-3, excuse me. And now it is 6-3. Cam Hill was, after a really, really good stretch for him in the Cape Cod League, is now in the game, pitching pretty well today. So we'll keep getting, we'll keep you apprised if anything changes there instead of committing a rights violation.
Yeah, I do want to note, I think it's amusing that you noted Cam Jones getting run, because I believe if you include, transfers statistics from their respective leagues last year, he had the most steals of anyone on the roster last year. So, tee-hee, very funny.
Da
Yes.
da 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 da.
He also went, he was playing first, and he just like Danny had to bring out his glove, like his pitching glove, with him when they put him in the
Oh,
mat, when the
the
mound. So
Tristan English. I love the Tristan English.
went from went from he went from first to pitcher, and then I think Gisler switched from third to first, which is where Gisler's played a lot, has started at third these few games. He's traditionally played first for us last year, but they're throwing him at third right now, so Cam Jones can play first.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really been a weekend led by newcomers. Drew Burris has three home runs as of the time of this recording. There could always be more. We mentioned Peyton Green. We talked about Jones. I mean, it's an interesting time, but that's if they can keep up the bats, and I feel like we say this every year,
We do say, we literally say it every single year. I think we've said that exact same statement after every single opening weekend the last 3 years.
So do you want to
It's
just
just,
record this and splice it into next year's opening weekend show just to see how it ages?
I might,
We're
hoping that they don't break character.
gonna.
But I mean, finish your statement, but I know what you're gonna say.
No, I just put that out there as a funny. If they can keep the hitting up, I mean, gosh, just rack up the wins in making it rain runs. There's a team that's been at the top of almost every statistical hitting category the whole time we've done this podcast, including years in which they haven't made the tournament. It's really just a matter of, can they figure out that Friday spot? We saw Busey, I'd say struggle is a fair way to put it last year in starts while being extremely, extremely effective. Scary Terry as a closer. If we can figure that kind of stuff out early, before the darkness comes later in the year, the ACC is going to be a gauntlet. Any one of these ACC teams, I firmly believe, has at least an outside shot at making the NCAA tournament, a la SEC baseball, a la SEC softball, a la, many other seems like various basketball leagues have years like that, and that's a tough spot to be. So now's the time to figure it out.
It just frustrates me that we know we have data on Terry Busey being a very reliable closer and getting and really capable of getting last three outs of a game. And they've decided, even after seeing that he struggled in starting appearances last year, they've decided to throw him into that fire again instead of realizing the value that he brings at the back end of the bullpen or the back end of a pitching regime. I don't know how I would phrase it. Anyway,
Rotation,
but rotation,
rotation.
yeah.
There you go.
In-game rotation, that's the weird one that gets me. But you know what I'm saying? It's like we have the numbers on we have actual hard empirical evidence on what Terry Busey can do. It's weird to make him try to do something out of form. Right. So it'll be interesting to see if they stick with the same rotation last year. Obviously, again, one data point, or next week, excuse me. It's one data point for this
Last
year.
year, as if they could hop in their time machine. Yes, I hear you.
Buddy, what I wish they could,
I get
but
your
it's
point.
one data point. It's one data point. It's one Friday start. Maybe it gets better with its variants. It gets better next week, but it's
It was
something to
cold.
monitor.
It was cold. It was a rough day. I mean, I get it. Opening day jitters exist. Like all there's
Yeah,
always
that's all true.
things that all those are things. I'll note just from a pure watching the baseball experience, pitch clock, very nice. They added it. It's in stadium now. You can see it. I mean, we all watched Braves games and MLB games last year, so like we've known the pacing of it. But I remember going to a few of those games and then deciding to not go to some games because they just would take forever. Also, because I knew there was gonna be about 35 runs scored a game to between the two teams, so it was gonna take a while. But it has been nice to get through these games faster because there's just more variability in college games than there are in MLB games. So that's been fun. Yeah, baseball and softball, both pitch clocks. We're getting through games now.
Softball actually had a pitch clock violation the other day,
Yes.
which was a very, very funny moment while everyone was trying to figure out what was going on and what the violation actually was. Mallory Black had, I think it stepped in right as the clock turned to 10 seconds left,
Oh no.
and
Well, that's.
Minnesota argued that she was late to step in and should take a strike. It
Well,
was bizarre.
and dare I say, which a rule that makes little to no sense to me, you guys said that there was no pitch clock installed at Tech, right?
At Mewbourne, there is none that I
Yeah.
saw,
Yeah.
but
Cause baseball had it last year, so I'm sure they're used to it. But I feel like you're really doing yourself a disadvantage to not be accustomed to the pitch clock timings by not having it in your home stadium. When you go, on the road or to neutral sites playing big games, and now you're forced to adapt to a different setting. And it's wild to me that the NCAA would allow people to opt out from that in general as well, in terms of a competition thing.
I'll look into this. I know I got to ask.
That
It's
it's
weird.
just such an interesting case, Like, huh.
It's really weird.
Big
But
baseball,
I will
softball
say, energy, though. I gotta say,
yeah.
everywhere's got different rules. It's what the Ivy's for, or whatever.
Yeah. It's I will say, at least like based on what the announcers were saying for Clearwater, there weren't that many violations. I think the Mallory Black one was like the third of the weekend. Obviously we have a 2 days cut, but at that point it was the third of the weekend, so everyone was keeping it mostly clean. So I think people have gotten used to it, at least, even if it's not in the stadium. I don't know. Maybe they're like their pitching routines are so fast already that the clock just enforces it. I don't know. Weird to think about. But going back to baseball, they will be back in action on Tuesday. That is the 20, what is that, the 20th? The 20th of February. That's a 6 p.m. first pitch at Georgia Southern. This is one of the biggest attendance games of the year for this team every year, and it always comes early, and it's always tough. So we'll see how Tech does with their first meaty challenge of the season, and then their weekend at the weekend they will face off against Cornell in their usual weekend schedule. Anything else on baseball and softball before we move on? I
I
see
mean,
heads shaking.
there
Jack, do you have
are,
something?
I mean, you could go to 10 games this weekend between the two teams on campus, or starting Wednesday if you so desire. So there's a lot of opportunity to see these teams if you have time. The weather's going to be fantastic this weekend, this coming weekend as well. So I would definitely come out because when I've talked to players, they have said seeing people there does matter to them. So if you can be there, be there. It's cheap. Bring your family.
It's a great way to spend a weekend, and I'm as firm a believer in the Super Saturday concept as one can be. It should be good for sporting in general.
Absolutely. Let's move over to tennis. The men were off this past week. I think they've been off 2 weeks, actually, or another week. They will be back in action with a doubleheader versus UNC Wilmington and Mercer next Saturday. But let's talk about the women while we're here. They faced off versus Penn, not Penn State, but just Penn on Friday. That was a 7-0 sweep. Let me read out your double scores. Penn took a victory on court 1-6-3, and then Tech 2 took courts 2 and 3, a 6-3 victory for Alejandra Cruz and Kylie Bilchev on court 2. And then Given Roach and Scarlett Nicholson took court 3-6-1. In singles, Carol Lee beat Penn on court 1-6-3, 6 or 1-6-6-4. Kylie Bilchev won on court 2 in 3 sets. Alejandra Cruz took the victory on court 3 in 2 sets. Scarlett Nicholson, another 2 set victory. And then Mahak Jain and Kate Sharbura, both with victories on 5 and 6. So, all in all, a good day for the Lady Jackets versus UPenn. And then we get to today's contest, which is clean old fashioned hate versus Georgia. Number 8, Georgia, which I did not recognize or realize before we started recording, a not so great result. Someone want to walk us through this one?
Yeah, I just opened it up here. Doubles wise, we won line one. So Caroline and Sharapova won 6-2 in their doubles line, but Bilchev and Cruz lost 7-5 on the second line, and then Given Roach and Scarlett Nicholson lost 6-3 in the third one. It came down to the Bilchev Cruz match at 7-5, so that was tight. That would have been a nice point to sneak out. And then singles wise, Carol Lee got beat by Dasha Vidmadova. Vidmanova, there we go. Russian names. She's 38th in the country. Beat her 6-2, 6-4. And then Alejandra Cruz was the second to, or no. Yes, she went down 6-4, 6-3, and then Scarlett Nicholson went down 6-3, 6-0. And those are the only matches that counted. They stopped it there. Sharapova won her match though, 6-1, 6-2. Mahak Jain was even at a set in her match at 3-6, 6-3, and Bilchev was a game away from winning the second set after getting bageled in the first set. So I mean, we're on track to maybe get 3 points. I mean, we're points here from getting just a few points away from getting 3, maybe 4. So it's just a tight one there. Georgia edges out, and in the matches they won, they resoundingly won. So considering it was on the road, losses suck, but could have been a lot worse too.
This one was at home.
Never mind. This was a bad loss. I regret everything I just
Bad
said.
loss.
Bad loss. Bad loss.
Narratively said, bad loss.
Whoops.
Bad
Whoops.
loss.
I forgot it was the men that were on the road, not the girls. Sorry. Yeah. No, this is.
The unspin zone.
I've unforced errored myself
Well, it's
here.
just more, it's like not unspin, it's just spin in the reverse direction.
That was bad. That was, but anyways,
Okay, do
yeah.
your single ladies dance, my guy.
Yeah.
Women's tennis back in action on, I think that's Thursday, the 23rd. No, that's Friday, the 23rd. They'll be up in Boston versus Boston College. That's a 3 p.m. first serve for doubles. And then on Sunday, that is the 25th, they will be over in Western New York at Syracuse. That's a noon first serve. I didn't see TV information or streaming information on those, but I assume YouTube will have them up, as it sometimes.
For home matches they do, but I don't trust Syracuse to be broadcasting
Wait. The like
YouTube
the best broadcasting college in the conference.
best
Yeah,
journal
but
broadcast
their
journalism
support of
matters.
non-rev sports, I don't know, maybe I'm still scarred from them cutting their swim teams, but
They're the only school I've seen send student reporters down for a women's basketball game. So
perfectly balanced as all things should be.
any news and notes, or any other thoughts on men or women's tennis before we move on and wrap up?
I mean,
Let me actually, did we check what the rankings updates were this week?
I have not.
I'm gonna
I
grab
have
that real
not.
quick.
I can at least.
Somebody stall for like 10 seconds.
Well, I mean, let's see here.
Unranked. There
Carolee,
we go. I got it.
unranked. Okay.
Yeah, for the men, singles, I assume Caralee's still ranked somewhere in the list. It's just a matter of
53.
where.
Yeah.
All right, same spot as the seventh, so makes sense.
Good stuff. Let's move on and wrap up with some news and notes. In football news, Corey Peoples was officially hired as defensive backs coach. Chris Winkie has been named associate head coach, and Ricky Brumfield is now assistant head coach for special teams, and also coaches of cornerbacks, excuse me. The number five golf team was off this past week, but they will be at the Watersound Invitational this week, first half of this week. That is February 19th through 21st. Jake, I see you have your hand up.
Yeah, I was just reacting to the second to last out of the baseball game. My apologies.
Wow, you're ahead of me. Dang it. I still haven't seen the
Rights
pitch.
violation.
Let's see
Rights
here.
violation by
Oh,
accident. I just want to make sure that we can
okay.
tell the people what happened. So stay tuned. For the meantime, I am going to talk about swim and dive real quick. They are headed to the ACCs. The ACCs is, dare I say, at least for them or for me, my watching pleasure, the number one meet of the year, it just because it is both a championship meet and Georgia Tech has lots of athletes in it. I think that's a nice balance. It's fast swimming, but also lots of things that we can then be watching, I guess. So just in terms of the schedule, we've got Tuesday through Saturday. There's 5 days of action there. It's up in Greensboro. Greensboro is almost always where this thing is held. Yeah, just
Much to
pretty,
Jim
pretty
Boeheim's discontent.
much to Jim Boeheim's discontent, but fans of, I guess, local Marriotts and or Hiltons and or Hyatts in Greensboro. There was 1 year where Georgia Tech had like 16 meet days in Greensboro between men's, women's, NCAAs and ACCs, which was absolutely batty. Just a quick ACC, I guess, preview, just in terms of what the conference is up to. Both the coaches and the numbers really like the ACC so far. I do need to drop in a couple more times into the cap, but in general, it's kind of how we shook it out last time. Among the men, we've got NC State, Florida State, Notre Dame, and UVA all in the top 16. Virginia Tech and Louisville in the top 25, and Tech sitting at 28th. Really interesting to see that The men are pretty evenly distributed. On the women's side, UVA third, NC State seventh, Louisville 10th, all sitting in the top 10. So that's neat stuff there. In terms of the coaches, as we talked about a couple weeks ago, basically the whole conference is ranked on the men's side. The women, Georgia Tech, are not ranked, but for the most part, just about everyone else is receiving votes or ranked. That's a bit of an oversimplification, but we got Virginia at number one. They've been up there for a good long while. We got Louisville at number nine, NC State at 10. North Carolina, Duke, Virginia Tech, 18 through 20, and Florida State receiving votes. So it really is a strong competition. I don't want to say don't expect much, but it's all about getting those individuals through to the NCAAs, I think, is the biggest item there. So getting those A, or more likely B with consideration cuts is probably the name of the day. And if Tech finishes in the top, 7-8, that'd be pretty good. And I, as I recall, an improvement for both sides. So really a time to see if that depth can come through and push as many the top end individuals through to the NC2As.
I have a critical note here about Virginia. Right
Yeah.
now, the world championship beat is happening, which does include Gretchen Walsh, Alex Walsh,
Ooh.
and Kate Douglas,
That
and
is a critical note.
Virginia's backstroker too. So basically, their whole women's team is currently in Doha swimming. So I don't know. I'm not reporting anything here. I just genuinely don't know if they're actually going to swim this meet, because it doesn't make sense for them to come from a meet that they prep for that's big for Olympic and US Olympic trials purposes, and then would come swim your conference championship that really doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things when you're literally going to be competing for gold medals in Paris. So I would, if there is a year for any other team a la NC State to win the conference, this is it, because I would be shocked if the Walshes and if that whole women's team shows up, because they don't need to. I assume they got their cuts earlier in the year anyways, if they want to swim NCAAs. Oh yeah, also they were
Yeah.
swimming long distance. They're swimming long course right now. These aren't even short courses. So it's a different
This
format.
is.
I mean, I assume going from long to short's much easier in terms of training, but still.
I've got a question, and this might just be me rabbit holing some info. Am I crazy? Didn't they used to swim some championship meets in a long course format in Olympic years before the pandemic? I feel like I remember that being a thing in 2016, but it's
I'm not
so long
aware.
ago now.
I
Oh my
honestly have
gosh.
no idea what happened in NCAA swimming before 2019, so I wouldn't know, but
Maybe that was a TYR Pro Series meet type change.
those are usually long course anyways, I think. So
Yeah.
that would check out, because they switched the pool to long course not long after NCAA season
Yeah.
ends. So I don't know.
Yeah. But just a note, if anybody is considering other postseason activity, the women's NCAAs are in Athens, so if anyone is local and into swimming, that's a not as nice of a pool as the one in Atlanta, but fast swimming nearby in an Olympic year, I know interest is up for that, so figured I'd throw that in there too.
Speaking of other championship events, the ACC championships for track and field are also this week. That'll be the 22nd through the 23rd. I imagine those are on ESPN Plus or some sort of ACC network streaming situation. So check that out. Our last note for the week, number four, Club Lacrosse is in action today. This past week, they beat number nine, BC, 14-8. Today, they are playing at Vanderbilt, I believe. That kicked off at 1 p.m. That is currently 14-1 Tech in the fourth quarter. So nothing doing for Vandy there. Their lacrosse's next game will be next Saturday, the 24th of February at 2 p.m. versus Alabama. Gentlemen, any other stuff to go over before we call it for today?
Nah, I think that it is fair to say that my going down the rabbit hole with those World University rankings took the place of me finding a trivia question. So we can save that for next week. I've got a couple in mind, but the historical tech results database certainly got to work out this episode, anyways. Oh yeah, and if anyone ever has any questions, on past results, feel free to drop us a line. We've gotten a couple of questions and comments from you guys about things you're curious about. So always happy to take a look at those too.
Sounds great. Mr. Grant, back to you to take those
Yeah, and if
out.
you are going to drop us a line, from the rumbleseat@gmail.com is our email address. That's the best place to do it. We appreciate all the feedback and comments we get from you guys. As a note, we do try and incorporate those where possible. You can, in the meantime, before next week, find From the Rumble Seat content at fromtherumbleseat.com. We put out tons of writing and things about Georgia Tech sports of all shapes and sizes there, including photo galleries now too, thanks to Charles, who's on last week. You can also find us on Twitter at FTRS blog. I'm at JGrant98. Jack's at Jack Nicholas. You can find Section 103 there as well at Section 103 and Section103.com. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube at From the Rumble Seat. You can find this podcast, wherever fine podcasts are sold. As always, please rate, review, subscribe, tell your friends. As always, word of mouth. That's the most important way to tell people you appreciate us and to give us a tune in. We appreciate your time tonight. Good night. Good luck and go Jackets.